Okay, so now I have the privilege of introducing our speaker. It's Mike S. from Dubois Bay, Oregon. So, from last night to this morning in the meetings, we kind of put together, we both started about the same time in 2015. Mike was a newcomer in January, and I was a new, you know, I was new in February. So we kind of grown in the program. We did a lot of the book studies, like the Blueprint for Progress, and we call it the Tree Book, so it's green. But each of those books took a year. We were with a group of like maybe 10 people, and a lot of them had many years in the program and was beneficial. So because of his experience, strength, and hope that I've gotten from seeing his growth, I asked him if he would be our speaker today. So here is my guest.
All right, thank you so much. I'm Mike S., and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi, everybody. Welcome, thank you for being here. And I wanted to start with lots of thank yous. So first of all, to Debbie for inviting me. And I have a gift for her. This is from our beach. We live on Lincoln Beach, just north of Depot Bay. And what we do is we gather agates and treasures every day out there. And some light of the spirit to find out whether you've got a good agate or not. This is what we do. We look up and we put it in the sun. We watch the sun through it. And if the sun shines through, then that's its true form. It's a true agate, just like our true spirit, right, when the sun shines through. So this is for you. And then we fight about who has the biggest agate. So that's goes on too. Thank you. I want to thank all of my home groups. So the first home group I want to thank is Tuesday Orchid. I love you guys. So a round of applause for Tuesday Orchid. Truly, you saved my life, and we'll talk about that as we go on. I want to do another home group is my Thursday men's group. Men's group, Thursday Grover Beach. Men's group. Shout out to my sponsor, Dave. Thanks for being here, buddy. Appreciate it. You saved my life, too. And then my other home group is in Lincoln City, Oregon. I just found out their real name today. I didn't know their real name. They are called Recovery by the Sea, Wednesdays at 4 o'clock. I love them all very much. So none of them are here today, but they're all here in my heart. So if I didn't thank you personally today, you're in my heart too. So I'm so glad you're all here. Before I begin, I was going to say also that I think I qualify for 6 anonymous programs. There's probably a couple I don't know about that I qualify for. And I go regularly to 3, but I was trained that you don't talk about that. This is Al-Anon. I've been invited to talk about, so you're going to get my Al-Anon story today. But just so you know, because what I wanted to do is I wanted to thank everybody who's here from Al-Anon. I wanted to thank everybody who's here from AA. And I wanted to thank all the double and triple and quadruple and centuple winners like me for being here today. So thank you all for being here. Give me some time. I feel very, very grateful today. So I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I've kind of been dreading going through what it was like. In my head for the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking of how I'm going to share my story. And I'm sharing, and I'm just like this, and I'm smiling. And then I hit that stuff with my son. And it catches right here, and I feel the tears, and I don't want to share it anymore, and I've stopped thinking about it. But I'm going to share it with you guys today. So things were going along pretty good, I thought. I thought I grew up really good. I thought I had a normal family. I really did. I didn't know any better. I thought this is what happened. I thought I had a normal family. Since coming here, I found out that I had a very abnormal family. I didn't know this at the time. I didn't put it in my brain at the time, but we had many alcohol and drug-related deaths in our family. We had two murders in our family that were related. We had just tragedy and horrible, horrible things. I had no idea. I had no idea. I grew up, I thought it was just great. I thought everything was wonderful. I thought this is how things work. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel right. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. But I thought that was, you know, that was this was life. So you guys taught me what my beginning of life was, so I'll come back there. But when I came in here, but when I was, I didn't see any of that. So I was just going along. I had a marriage. I thought it was normal. I thought my wife was normal. I didn't know anything. She's in recovery. I didn't know. I didn't even think of that. Oh, she's fine. There's no alcohol in the house. She's fine. And we had one child. And just one. And I poured everything into my son. Poured everything. And I thought that was normal too. I thought I was being a good father. And I gave him everything I could. I gave him everything emotionally, physically, everything I could give. I was the coach for every sport. I was the assistant coach for every sport. I was not good enough to be the coach. But I was the assistant coach for every sport. We went everywhere. He didn't go to mom to talk about stuff. He went to dad. We were best friends, best buddies. He really liked bird watching. That's what he got into. So I got into bird watching. And we traveled all over together. And bird watchers, what we do, birders, we have a list. And if we see the bird, we get to write it off of our list. And, oh, we saw that bird. Our rule, talk about this explains codependency. Our rule was we never counted the bird unless we both saw it. Huh? Is that codependent? So I would see something, doesn't count. I'd spend the next 3 months trying to get my son to see it. He would see something, same thing. We don't do that anymore. We don't do that anymore. I texted him the other day and saw something. He saw something, and we're just happy for each other and can't wait till we get a chance to see it too. But that was our codependency. And so I was, my son was everything to me, and I thought everything was going really, really well. I thought it was going really well. And I think he was about 16 years old. And he showed up to dinner one night, completely loaded out of his mind. I didn't even notice. I thought he was strange that night. But my wife noticed. And grandma noticed. And he was loaded out of his mind. So I just went into panic mode. I didn't know what to do. I just did not. I had no tools. I had nothing to think of. I called my mother. My mother was the first one in our family who broke the cycle of addiction. And she has, I think she has over 40 years of sobriety now. And she worked for Betty Ford Center. She became a drug and alcohol psychologist. Anyway, so I called her. And what do I do? What do I do to fix this? What do I do to fix this? So we began fixing. I went on the great Fix-It marathon. And I started to do that, take him to meetings. Is there an outpatient group he can be a part of? And so forth. And then a little while later, he and some friends decided they would all go drop acid together. And the other children that were with him dropped acid, and then the next day they went back to school with a fuzzy head or whatever. But my son, he went into deep psychosis, and we lost him. He was gone for days and days and days. We had no idea what was going on. He went crazy. He went into complete drug-driven mania. And he was arrested at school. I was a school teacher. I had to go down to the school and meet with the principal and the teachers. I was humbled to my knees. The whole time I did it, I was in tears, near tears. I wanted to throw up. It was an absolute disaster for me. And then I had to go down to the police station. What a blessing. One of my sponsees showed up at the police station with me and walked me through there. One of my sponsees. That's how this program works, is that we help each other. It's as simple as that. Simple as that, right? So, now I've got a crazy drug addict on my hands. So this is lovely. And again, we go back into our fix-it mode. I'm going to help him get this expunged from his record, and we're going to get him cleared his name, and we're going to get him on the right medication, and I'm going to get him to the right doctors, and on and on and on. And needless to say, it wasn't working. It wasn't working well at all. And this whole time, I'm in the fix-it mode. I can fix this. And I wasn't fixing me. I was in horrible, horrible pain. One of the things that I've learned coming here that I've been told by a very wise person is that that all of us in here, whether we're alcoholics or Al-Anon, that we all have the disease of alcoholism. Some of us just have the drinking version. And at the time, I had the non-drinking version. Now, the drinking version can lead to loss of job. It can lead to loss of family. It can lead to loss of health and emotional, financial ruin. And it can lead to death. The non-drinking version can too. I did not know this at the time, but it can. And my emotional well-being just went down dramatically. The nights sitting up with my wife in tears as she cried all night for her baby. And I just held her, and I didn't know what to do. And the nights that I would sit in the bathtub with the cold water rolling on my head from the shower, because otherwise I was going to throw up, and I from just the nausea, the pain of thinking of him out there dying. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And I learned that there was nothing that I could think of to help myself. And there was nothing I could think of to help my son. So, getting back to where he was. We put him in treatment program. Didn't work. I learned a lot. I would go to the family things and the alcohol counselors and drug counselors and mental illness counselors would tell me things. And I learned a lot. One of the greatest things they taught me was that the opposite of addiction isn't meetings. The opposite of addiction isn't recovery. The opposite of addiction is community. Oh, community. And that's my recovery too. It's community. Anyway, I was learning a lot, but he was just continuing to go downhill. And we sent him off to college. I don't think this was the brightest thing, but somehow he graduated from high school, and we sent him off to college. And he went off to a dormitory. It was 9 stories high. He was on the 9th story with an open window with no screens. And he went into a deep manic state brought on by drug use as well. He tells me that he had to take a test one day on physics, I believe it was, and he gave all his answers to the philosophy class. Needless to say, he didn't pass any of those classes. But when I got the phone call, And I heard that he was spinning. I could hear it. He was crazy. And I thought about that nine stories up. And I didn't want him to die. So we drove down there. He was in San Diego. We drove down. And that drive was so difficult because just before that, I had dropped him off. I was so proud that my kid was going to go to college. And we picked him up. And we took him to the hospital there. And the doctor looked us in the eyes and said, your son is bipolar. And he's an addict. You know, he's bipolar. And we all cried. He even cried. We all cried. And at least that was the beginning of learning something, learning what was happening. So I continued to try to be the fixer. I'm giving you the meds. I'm taking you to the doctor. Here's what you're doing. You're living with us. You're getting a job. This is what you're doing. And it continued to not work. I remember driving somewhere in the middle of the night, getting him drunk from some party where he had taken some pills of some sort, and he's going manic, and I'm calling the psychologist, the psychiatrist, and I'm at the, I took him to the emergency room and paid, I don't know, $1,000 for all these tests and things, and he couldn't have cared less. He just wanted to get loaded. And I just kept going downhill. And I talk about how the non-drinking alcoholism can kill, how Al-Anon problems can kill. I started to think about suicide. It's all I could come up with. I didn't have a lot of tools. I didn't grow up with tools. So I started to think about suicide. Couldn't stand the thought of this little boy dying. He's now a teenage boy, but you know, in my mind, he's the little boy. Couldn't stand the thought. And so I thought of suicide. And I was going to work every day, and at work, people would come up, you know how they come up, and they say, how you doing? And you're supposed to answer, fine, how are you? And I would say, not very well. Last night, my son was shooting heroin, and the guy he was shooting with almost died, and they had to revive him. And I'm afraid my son might go to jail for a long, long time, and I'm not really sure what to do. And people at work who are expecting fine were like, right? No, this was, no, not, this is not what we want to talk about. And my boss came up to me. And my boss pulled me aside, and he said, you're going to an Al-Anon meeting. Now, I heard a little bit about Al-Anon because of my mom. She'd been to all the Anons, and she had actually said that in her belief system, I'm not saying this to be true, but in her belief system, Al-Anon is the most difficult of the 12-step programs. That's what she told me. I don't know if it's true or not. That's what she thought. But anyway, I knew of Al-Anon. Okay. Maybe I'm willing to try that. I'm kind of desperate. You know, let me look at my calendar. Let me look at my calendar and let me look at the schedule. See if there's a one near me that's got nice people or something. Maybe it's in a nice place. He said, no, we're going tonight. It's at Orchid tonight at 6:30. And here's the address, and I will be there, and you will be there. Oh. So that was my Al-Anon meeting. And I don't see this man very often, but every time I see him, I hug him. And I can't tell him thank you for saving my life, because I did that one time, and he said, no, that's what we do here. Stop it. You go pay it forward. But right here, right? This man right here. So I come to the Tuesday Orchid meeting, and let me tell you about my son. I'm going to tell you about my son. And you guys were very nice. You didn't say, you know, you ought to share about you. You ought to read the book. No, you just let me blah. You let me cry. You let me talk. And after a few meetings, I started to listen. And I wanted to listen for any of you who had my story, if you were talking about your husband, you're not helping me. If you wanted to talk about your wife, I'm waiting for my story. And then some people started to tell my story. Deb started to tell. I thought that was my story. Seemed darn close. And I started to hear my story. I thought, okay, I can stick around here. I'm starting to hear my story. And I think that Katerina and Martha had just finished a step writing group, not too many months before that, I'm not sure. And I kind of think that they started that because Deb and I and a couple of other newcomers were in there. But they all of a sudden they said, oh, we're doing a step writing group, who wants to join us? Step writing group. And so Ryan and we got wrangled in. Thank you for doing the step writing group. And step writing group. So for 3 years, we went an hour early to the meeting and wrote steps. Al-Anon beautiful steps. Wow. Changed my life. And slowly, 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 I started to see what I could do with my life to make it different. Slowly, I started to see my absolute craziness in the family dynamic. And I started to get some hope. Now, I really clung to the hope that we read in the opening of many of our meetings that says something like, as we recover, there is a great chance that the family can recover too. Something like that. Oh, boy, did I like that. Because at first I thought, that means my son's going to be perfect again. And then I started to see that what it meant is that somewhere in the family it's going to get better if it starts with me. If I start to do something, there's hope for the rest of the family. It doesn't mean it's going to be how I want it to be, but there's hope. And I started to really gain from that. Now, all this time, my son is still in and out of treatment programs, outpatient, inpatient. He's still running amok. I'm still trying to fix him. I still can't have a phone call. I hear the phone, and I think it's one of the bad things, and I start to, a traumatic PTSD, maybe you could call it, and I'm still there. But I'm starting to get a little something, right? I'm starting to get a little something. And I'm really feeling like, for me, Al-Anon has been so powerful, but such a slow, incremental growth of what I need to understand and where I need to go. So the steps were wonderful. And I would do them with the group, and then I'd run them by my sponsor, and we'd work through it that way. And I got to the fourth and fifth step. And I'm going, what amends could I possibly have to make? What did I do wrong? I'm not the one out there driving drunk and loaded on the streets. I'm not the one not taking my medicine and going crazy and running around naked with a machete in the parking lot with the police pulling their guns on me. That's not me. That's this other person. That's my son. I don't have amends to make. And I found out that I'm really sick. I'm really, really ill with this disease of alcoholism. And that I had great amends to make to my family. That I had huge anger and huge control, illusion of control, and anger and fear. And it turned out that fear was one of my greatest defects because I had taken it to such a point that I couldn't do anything else. That I couldn't give love to my wife. I couldn't give love to my parents. I couldn't give love to my son because all I could think about was the horrible things that were going to happen. It's all I could think about. So I couldn't give love. And that was one of the things I had to make amends for. And the other thing I really had to make amends for is that controlling. And this is the way my son described it to me recently. He said, "Dad, I was falling out of the sky. And you came along in your helicopter and almost killed me with the problem." Yeah, I get that. I was the worst helicopter parent there could be. And so I started to learn to let him fall. I started to learn to let him fall. And if he lives, he will learn from it. And if he dies, that's, you know, I gotta let him fall. I gotta let him fall. And I met people in here who had lost members to the disease, who had lost family members to the disease, who had lost loved ones to the disease. My home group in Lincoln City has a woman who has lost two sons to the disease. Two sons have died of alcoholism. She comes to the meeting every week and smiles. I met a man who lost his son about the same age as mine. And then I started to listen to your stories, and I started to remember my childhood. I've lost members of my family to this disease too. Several. So I started to remember my childhood. And I was blown away. It was like reading a brand new book I'd never read before. And it's all because of you guys. I heard your stories, and I started to, you would talk about your wife or husband or mother or father or grandfather or grandmother, aunt, uncle. And I started to say, well, I have those people in my family too. And oh wow. And that's when I started to have that connection with all of you. And I was, oh, I don't need to hear my story, because the emotions in every one of your stories are the emotions in my story. And that's when I started to get that connection. That was good for me. So I started to remember my childhood. So let me tell you about my childhood. I qualified for this program at birth. Yes, I did. My maternal grandfather was a raging alcoholic. He beat up my grandmother in an alcoholic rage when she was pregnant with twins. One of the twins died. The one that lived was my mother. Then he went on to murder a man. And this is when I, in an alcoholic rage, and this is when I started to understand not just the alcoholism and mental illness in my family, but I started to understand the lies and secrets of my family. They told me lies about all of this. They said, "You don't get to see Grandpa because we don't really get along with him." No, you don't get to see Grandpa because he's a murderer. Because he beat up Grandma and killed the baby. They told me a story. They told me the story. They said Grandpa caught a man beating up his wife. And that's when he shot and killed her. Him. He shot and killed him to protect his. And here's, in Al-Anon, I started to think about it. I started to think of all the movies I've seen, all the books I've read, all the things I've seen. He caught him sleeping with his wife. And he was drunk off his you-know-what. And he pulled out a gun and shot him. That's what happened. You know that's what happened. I know that's what happened. That's a nice lie. They come up with these lies. So who else in my family? My cousins. Not too many years ago, I buried a cousin about my age. He had two twin boys. He started drinking heavily. He started having an affair. He couldn't handle the guilt of the affair, and he committed suicide. And so I buried him. While I was there sitting next to my aunt, trying to help her through this horror, my other cousin sat next to me, and she was so polluted on drugs and alcohol, she did not know who I was. She has since passed away of the disease too. Oh, we told a lie about that also. And this is kind of funny. The lie we tell is he had alcohol poisoning. And then later on, my mother took me aside and said he killed himself. Oh, wow, okay, thank you, thank you. And my childhood was, I hope you'll indulge me. I figure I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to tell you it all. I think I need to get it out. Maybe you'll get something from this, maybe. I hope you'll indulge me. I remember our godparents coming over. They always came over. And the drinking was so prevalent that none of the adults got up. I, as a child, it was my job to serve alcohol to all the adults. Maybe some of you can relate to that. And I knew that Auntie Lou liked a little extra of this bottle poured in. I knew that my mother didn't really complain about anything you gave her. And I knew that my godfather and my father wanted the beer, and you take the cap off like that, and there was a little puzzle under the thing, and I got really good at reading the puzzle. And I was always told, here's another lie, I was always told that we're not alcoholics. The other family is, because they're worse. And I bought it. Oh, we're not alcoholics. How about this? I remember Dad and my godfather up in the walnut trees, each with a chainsaw in their hand, pruning the trees. Not in the ladder. They were sitting in the branches. They were drunk off their butts. And I remember when the chainsaw was dropped. And it just cut the pants and drew blood. Didn't cut off their leg, but could have. And I remember the laughter. That is an abnormal family. That is problems. My goodness. And I remember getting hit sideways so hard that I end up going through the air and landing against the wall. Because I was laughing and woke the baby. Well, maybe because the silent baby allowed people to drink, maybe. Maybe because the silent baby allowed, I don't know what. There was anger about something else. But I remember those things now. I didn't remember them until I came in here. But I remember them now. And so I really believe that I qualified at birth. And I remember picking my mom up off of the floor with the vomit all over the floor. I remember that. And so I'm so grateful for her. I'm so grateful for her that she broke the cycle of recovery. She broke the cycle of recovery. Everybody, not everybody, but so many in our family were sick. And she broke that cycle of recovery and made it okay to go to 12-step meetings. Made it okay. Made it in our family so that now we can talk about 12-step meetings. And we can go. So let me bring myself back now to the middle of my recovery and what it really became like after doing those steps and going through them. One of the things, this is one of my big things now. I've been doing this for about a year now. I read The Courage to Change in the morning. I write down little notes of a word or a sentence that hits me. And then I keep looking at it all day long. So one of those little thoughts came to me. Oh, now where was I? In my recovery now. Hold on, I'm having a little brain freeze. Coming back to the middle. Yes. So I'm doing the steps, and I'm starting to feel a little bit of recovery. What does recovery feel like to me? A little bit of peace. So one of those things in my book that I read out of Courage to Change said, note what you feel like when you turn your will and your life over to God. Note what you feel like. So back then, what did it feel like? I started to be able to eat a big meal and not feel nauseous. That was a big deal. I started to be able to sleep through the night. That was a big deal. I started to be able to let my wife sob, to let my wife have her fear and pain, to let her have her ideas of what should be done to fix my son. And I started to learn how to let her have those and not to make them be my feelings. Well, it's big. It was big. And then I started to go into this idea of detaching with love. This is, I don't know where you guys came up with this. Detach with love. I got the idea of detach. I'm not answering my phone. I'm not texting you back. I don't really want to talk. That's detach. But detach with love. This has been a great struggle for me, and this has been my great area of growth for several years now. Detach with love. So what did it start to feel like there? It started to feel like I could talk with my wife, who's in recovery. Did I mention that? I didn't know that. Now I know, hey, she's one of my qualifiers. I had no clue. I think she's got 32 years clean and sober, and I had no clue. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know here, right? I didn't know here. I never thought to go into a meeting and say, oh, my wife is one of my qualifiers. I never thought to think that. Oh, heck yeah, she's one of my qualifiers. So what did it feel like to start to detach and let her have her feelings and not fight her all the time? You may be right. This is what we should do with our son. We should get him back into this treatment program. And now I'm starting to feel something different. I've been going to meetings with you guys for a couple of years in Al-Anon. And I'm hearing you guys talk about boundaries. I'm hearing you talk about letting people hit their bottom. So I'm starting to think about this. Maybe I can have a boundary. Maybe I can let somebody hit their bottom. And so she's talking about fix. And I'm starting to not fight her as much. And then I'm just sort of doing my thing. And I started to, one of the first things what I did was I let go of his medical stuff. I let go of his pills, his bipolar pills. I don't touch them anymore. I don't ask them what he's taking. I don't ask him when he's going to the doctor. I have nothing to do with that. That happened several years ago. And note what it feels like when I turn something over to my higher power. Oh, my shoulders feel a little bit more relaxed. I'm breathing a little better. Okay, that's a good one. So I've turned that over to him. Then I started to set some boundaries. You're not going to call me in the middle of the night with a disaster, with a problem. Even if it is somebody's about to die or whatever, then you call 911. They'll be able to get there a lot quicker than I will anyway. And I learned this from you guys. I can't believe I didn't know this. I learned this. You hit that button that says, turn off the phone until 6 a.m. And so now my phone is off at 10 p.m. and doesn't go back on till 6 a.m. unless Auntie calls three times. Right? You guys taught me that. I didn't know that. That's a boundary. What does that feel like? Start to note what that feels like. Now I'm sleeping. I'm waking up with a little bit of a smile on my face. That feels good. And I'm still worried. Oh no, what if? What if? And now you guys are teaching me about prayer and meditation. So I'm praying for the third step prayer, basically. I'm praying for my life to be turned over. I'm praying for my son's life to be turned over. And now I'm realizing I've got other qualifiers, and that you've got qualifiers too, that you're worried about also. So now I'm starting to pray for all of these people to be turned over to my higher power, to our higher power. Turn over, turn over. And I start to feel better. Starting to feel better about that. And the meditation, then I started to meditate. And my meditation start. It's still today like this. And I usually do it at the ocean. It's one of the reasons why I moved so close to the ocean. I tell everybody we moved up north because we had to afford a place to put my mother-in-law in with us, and we had to find a place that was good for my aunt and everything. The truth of it, the real truth is, the greedy truth, I wanted to be in my meditation place, and I wanted to fall asleep listening to the ocean every night, and I wanted to be able to walk on the beach every day. So I walk on the beach every day, and I breathe in faith, and I breathe out fear. And I do that over and over and over again until I start to feel the fear go. What does that feel like? Oh, that feels great. And then I start to breathe in peace. And I start to breathe in love. That's when I'm really at it. If I'm breathing in love and out love, that's a good meditation. And maybe even the best meditation of all, which I never get to, rarely, is when I breathe in and I breathe out and there's nothing. Just the lights that dance on the water. That happens sometimes, not that often. So you taught me to work on prayer and meditation, and it helped greatly. It helped greatly. Now, as all this recovery, how are we doing on time? Anybody test me? We're good? Do I need to lengthen, shorten? Just keep going. All right. That's my greatest fear, really, in speaking, is not that I'm going to say something dumb or you're going to fall asleep. My greatest fear is I get to the end and there's still 40 minutes left to go, and everybody looks at each other, and that's the worst. So I'm going to keep going. So as I'm starting to get this recovery, I'm starting to get some recovery. I'm starting to get this. The promise that you told me, that the family would get some recovery too, I'm starting to see it. Now, I didn't see it in my son necessarily, bless his heart, but I started to see it in my mother. I started to relate to her in a way that I'd never related to her before, as two parents talking to each other. And I mentioned my wife. I've started to, I honestly think that my marriage was going to be shot if I didn't come here. I mean, we couldn't talk about anything except disaster. Now, you cannot stay married with that. You cannot. We stopped talking about disaster. And we started going out on date nights and watching dumb TV shows and holding hands as we walked down the shady part of town. And well, you got to check in on the alcoholics somehow. You can never let go of your Al-Anonness completely. And so I started to see that recovery in the family. And I started talking to my father and having compassion towards him. And I started talking to one of my cousins and having compassion towards her. And my son has started to do better. I don't think he's in the program. He went to meetings for a while. He was there. I don't think so. But the less I try to control what he's doing, the better choices he seems to make. The better choices he seems to make. And I found, and this is, I'm very ashamed to say this, is that huge feeling of fear that I had that he would die from this disease, I'm learning that a large chunk of that fear was just fear of how his choices affected my life. And that's really the truth. that it would keep me from doing the things I want to do, living the way I want to do, feeling peace. It kept me from feeling peace. So I don't want you to die because of that. If you die out there because of this disease, you're going to screw up my peace. Seriously. I learned that in here, that that was part of my disease. So now I'm working towards true compassion towards him. Rather than fear that he's going to die, fear that my life is going to be screwed up, just true compassion and listening. Trying to accept his choices. And a while back, we were in the car. He calls on the car. And the first thing, my chest starts to go to that thing. It's going to be a disaster. He's going to be manic. Something bad happened. No, remember Al-Anon, let it go. Trust in God, let it go. And he and my wife are talking, they're talking. My girlfriend's pregnant. And mom starts to go, well, you need to get a better job and make sure you have insurance, and you need to do this and 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 this. And I'm just listening and going, Al-Anon, what do you want me to do? What would Martha do? What would Katerina do? Come on, where is it? And he says, I want to talk to Dad. He puts me on the phone. He says, Dad, what do you have to say? And you guys told me what to say. I said, congratulations, I love you. Congratulations. Yeah, right? And the other day, I get the phone call again. And again, even, I know he's doing better. I know he's taking his meds. He tells me now, oh, I take my meds. I sleep really well at night. He said, the biggest fear I have about having a baby is I have to take my meds and I'm not going to be able to get up and feed the baby. His girlfriend's name is Raven. Raven's going to have to do that. I said, yeah, well, on the weekends, you take care of that baby. You know, or you get up in the morning to take care of that baby. But anyway, he calls and he says, and I go, and now when these things happen, you see, it hasn't gone away completely, but it's better. Now I see it coming and I take my deep breath and Al-Anon takes over and I let it go. And so I say, okay, what's happening? He says, it's a girl. And I just cried. And I cried and I cried and I cried. I cried because we haven't had a girl in the family in a while. I got one niece, but she's getting older. And so I cried and cried and cried for a girl in the family. I cried and I cried because my son is really proud and really wants to be a father. And he's doing really well. He's holding down a job. And he's holding down a relationship. And he's taking his meds. And I don't know about drinking or drugs or not, but the last time he came and stayed with us, the only thing I smelled on his breath was a cigarette, and he didn't look like he was loaded. But anyway, it's none of my business. But I cried for that. And I cried because I've got recovery now. I've got Al-Anon recovery, and our family is recovering, and I can feel it. I can feel it, right? And I can't wait to have this little girl visit, and I can take her to one of the meetings with me, and I can't wait to take her bird watching. I've already picked out her binoculars. I hope she's got good eyesight. I cried, and it wasn't those sobbing tears of sadness and fear and anxiety. It was tears of joy. Tears of joy. And you guys have given me that. Just so grateful. So what do I do today? I go to lots of meetings. I go to two Al-Anon meetings a week for sure. And so I go to a Zoom meeting, the men's meeting, yay. And I go to my in-person meeting in Lincoln City. I read The Courage to Change every day. Got my little thoughts for the day that I take with me. What was today? Invite serenity. Recognize the world is in good hands. Woo! I'll take that one. I'm going to read this all day today, all night tonight, and then tomorrow I'm going to have another one. I read Courage to Change. I read other Al-Anon literature. I talk with somebody in the program every day. Every day I talk with somebody in the program. I pray and meditate, and I used to do it once a day in the morning and maybe once at night. Today, I do it constantly. I've learned that I have to. When I don't, I break down. I go back to my defects of character rather quickly. So I pray and meditate constantly. It really helps me. What else do I do for my recovery? Let me think. Meetings, people, sponsor. I should talk to my sponsor more, but I talk to my sponsor. I work with sponsees. Using the Blueprint for Progress and the Green Book, right? The same book you guys worked with me, I work with somebody else with them. And I'm available for people. And then the other thing is, I don't know, Al-Anoners, I think we all feel this. I think AA, Al-Anon, people who are members of double winners and triple winners, I think we all get this. In our daily life, walking down the street at a restaurant, at work, doing a volunteer thing, doesn't the alcoholic always find us? That's what I found. I don't know, but maybe I'm just the only one. But the alcoholic and addict always seems to find me. And so I get to use what you've taught me and show them the schedule. Show them a meeting. Show them how to do this. Guide them to recovery, hopefully. So that's where I am today. I'm turning it over a lot. I'm really using the principles of this program. I'm learning more about this program. I'm getting more deeply into this program all the time. And I'm really seeing that connectedness of the programs too. And that I wanted to talk about that just briefly. We still got time? I wanted to talk about that just briefly. This morning's Al-Anon meeting in the corner over there. If you were there, you know what I'm talking about. If you weren't there, it was a mixture of AA, Al-Anon, double winners, whatever. And we bared our souls, didn't we? We bared our souls. And this was so powerful. This was so powerful seeing the recovery here. And this is something that I want to see more of. I just loved it. And it reminded me a little bit of what Bishop Desmond Tutu did in South Africa after the horrible, I guess we could call it civil war and racism and violence of that country, to wreck the country. They had meetings like we did with everybody gets together. Everybody who hurt somebody, everybody who feels hurt. And we all worked together and learned how to forgive each other. And then learn how to forgive ourselves and move forward. So I'm really feeling that today, that whole dynamic of recovery, of all of us in recovery, and all of this love and recovery that we need together, this forgiveness we need. And I'm really working on forgiving myself and moving forward. I'm very hopeful today. I'm hopeful for the future. There's so much awful stuff out there in the news. That's something else I'm doing for my recovery. I'm watching more of the ball game, less of the news, okay? That's what I'm doing. Here, we've got Giants and Dodgers fans sitting at the same table. That's probably a bigger deal than somebody in Narcotics Anonymous and Al-Anon sitting at the same table. But anyway, that's what I'm really working on today, and I really felt that today, is that dynamic of how we all have this disease. It manifests itself in different ways. And a recovery is the 12 steps. That's the recovery. All of us, it's the 12 steps. And it's community. That's our recovery. So I just can't thank you how much. Thank you all. Like I said, I feel really hopeful for the future. I feel hopeful for my recovery. I'm excited about... I'm a bird watcher. I'm excited about the next bird I'm going to see. Oh, shout out to the golden-winged warbler that showed up at San Luis Obispo when I came here the other day. Yes, look at that one up. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for what the next day is going to bring. One of the other things that I pulled out, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, it was something about the miracles, seeing the miracles, expecting the miracles, accepting the miracles, getting ready for the miracles. And I feel like the miracles are there for all of us. And I'm feeling very happy about them. This is my home. I'm Al-Anon for life, one day at a time, because this is what I need. This is what I love. I don't feel like killing myself today. I feel like staying around and living today. So, blessings to you all. Thank you so much for having me here. Love you all.
For being our speaker today. And
Daisy just spoke for an hour and 55 minutes. Did I?
Are you lying to me, Daisy?